is Primetime Sports on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
Two minutes past the hour, it's Primetime Sports for Monday, December 20th, 2010. Bob McCown, Stephen Brett in our Toronto studios. You're listening on the Fan Radio Network on Sirius Channel 97 or on Rogers Sportsnet. A little later, Pinball Clements will join us in the studio. Lester Munson of ESPN on Michael Vick, the other side of the story. His performance on the field is one thing. The dog story is another thing. But people might forget that he has accumulated some significant debt. In fact, he's on a court-ordered budget until at least 2015.
Yep.
So we'll address that with Lester Munson. Some breaking news, I am told, Mr. Brunt, that the Hamilton Pan Am / Tiger Cat Stadium plan has hit a bug.
Yeah, as reported in, I think on the Spectator, Hamilton Spectator website today, but the site, the proposed site on Aberdeen Avenue, which is in part a rail yard owned by Canadian Pacific, I think, is the price for that piece of land seems to have be significantly higher than some people thought it was going to be, and it's so the funding gap is much greater than people thought it would be, and they're looking at other places again, which I believe they have, 6 weeks till deadline now, something like that? February 1st.
The latest deadline, you mean?
I think that's the last one.
Let's find out. Here's the president of the Tiger Cats here, Scott Mitchell. Scotty, so is this is definitely a problem. Is it I gather it's potentially a terminal problem too, isn't it?
Well, I think it might be a terminal problem on that site, but I certainly don't think it's a terminal problem in order to get this thing landed once and for all.
Well, I mean, if you got 6 weeks, where are you going now? You're suggesting that maybe, I know this site was acceptable to you, maybe not your preferential site. Do you go back to Hamilton City Council now and say, okay, let's go here?
Well, no, at this site, much like the East Mountain site that was previously extensively worked on, were sites brought forward by either the city or the facilitator, and we agreed with both sites. So, there's been a great deal of work done at East Mountain. Some of the concerns up there were around a corporate development. That doesn't necessarily have to be the case. So that site's pretty much site ready to a large extent. And then, of course, there's a lot of people who've never understood why a logical site that was fairly easy and logistically could get done, as well as financially feasible and responsible Confederation Park, that probably will get a great deal of debate in the coming days and weeks.
I guess what people are going to ask, though, Scott, and I those sites, as a Hamiltonian, I obviously know what you're talking about, and I'm not sure people listening to this probably don't and probably don't care about the details, but We are at the 11th hour, the 11th and a half hour right now. There has been a pretty spirited political debate. It has been difficult to find a site that was satisfactory both to the Ticats and to the city. The Aberdeen site that now looks like it's not going to happen was a compromise, but it was a compromise that was acceptable to everyone. In 6 weeks, can that political debate be settled? Can you do the kind of due diligence on a new site? I understand you went a long way down the road on East Mountain, but in the end, that was not the chosen site. And the Pan Am people are clearly starting to look elsewhere. They're talking about, they're talking to other municipalities about a much smaller stadium, not a football stadium. It just seems to me that there's precious little time, given that I think what is a real deadline on February 1st.
Well, I don't think there's any question. We've had tremendous patience from not only HOSCO, but the provincial government, who've been terrific, and the federal government. So I don't think there's any question, Stephen, you're right. We've exhausted or getting close to exhausting the patience of those partners. But the reality is, as well, is that they've gone out of the way to make sure everybody understands they'd like a Hamilton solution. I think they're still committed to a Hamilton solution. And I think, the good news is that 80-90% of the work we've done entailed more than just site work. It entailed a relationship building between the city and the Tiger Cats. It included an education about the financing and what the stadium is going to be. So that sort of work is transferable to another site. And as I said, I think there's some logical sites that certainly have great merit and need to be looked at.
The mayor of Bob Bratina, the new mayor of Hamilton, how does he fit into this equation as compared to the former mayor? Do you find him to be a greater ally to the Tiger Cat cause?
Well, I don't think he could be a worse ally for the Tiger Cat cause than the previous mayor. But I certainly think Bob's been hugely supportive of the team, and more importantly, the concept and understanding the importance of a new stadium. And, you know, look, this is a municipality that's looking at a $100 million investment from three levels, or certainly two levels of government and HOSCO, that it'd be hard to believe they could walk away from that level of investment. And I think Mayor Bettina has been fantastic. He's certainly been supportive of trying to get this thing done, and we're looking forward to working with him.
But let me play devil's advocate here for a second, Scott. You know, if part of the benefit to the city was a remediation of a brownfield site, of an old industrial site, in which was essentially downtown Hamilton or close to it, an area which is badly in need of redevelopment and badly in need of investment, what are the political advantages to using a piece of parkland, which is Confederation Park, we're talking about green space, that is some distance, is not nowhere near downtown Hamilton, is out on a highway, that wouldn't provide any of those kind of spin-off benefits, the urban renewal benefits that were part of the original political attractiveness of the stadium?
Well, yeah, those weren't the political attractiveness of the stadium of the funding partners at HOSCO and the federal government. The city, or some people in the city, decided that was their political mandate. But, you know, the reality is, Stephen, people are going to have to make a choice. I mean, the fact of the matter is there's all sorts of retail and commercialization going on at Confederation Park. It's slated for development regardless of what happens. The provincial government this last week located a secondary GO station who would be within a kilometer of where the stadium site could be. So, you know, it suggests that the only benefits to Hamilton have to be downtown, I think, is a little bit ludicrous. I certainly understand why we want to improve Hamilton downtown. I think we're committed to helping with that. We're one of the few people that invested, as you know, Stephen, in a multi-million-dollar building in downtown Hamilton the last few years, and I don't think Bob Young's commitment to Hamilton can be questioned in any way.
I'm interested in your position on the fact that a GO station has been committed to or is being talked about a kilometer away. What's the impact of that? A kilometer is an awful long way to walk.
No, it's much less than a kilometer. So it's within a kilometer. But I think it's important in terms of what the provincial government's mandate is in terms of growing public transportation. I think there's all sorts of abilities to partner on potentially with parking and some of the issues surrounding that around a GO station. So, you know, it's just one aspect to it, but I think it could be an important aspect to what is a solution. And again, there's other potential solutions as well, but certainly I think Confederation Park deserves some serious debate.
If the Confederation Park site gets the go-ahead, is Bob Young a participant in the development there?
Well, I think that's going to be up to the city to decide what they want to do with that. I mean, there is some discussion from some people who would see great value to having a stadium there, but potentially no development. I think regardless of what could potentially happen there, you'll see Bob as a financial participant. And, you know, if there was no appetite for an adjacent development, you know, we could probably move forward without it. But certainly, when you're looking for private sector money, a lot of that has to do with what development's available.
Now, there's obviously, this is going to be, it's been contentious from day one. I assume that this process will be contentious even with facing a looming deadline. And Scott, it all comes down to, you know, this comes back to the question which we originally posed on this, which I think is, if this doesn't fly, you know, if HOSCO decides to go elsewhere, if a compromise is not reached, the millionth compromise on this, what's plan B for the Tiger Cats?
Well, I don't think it'll be HOSCO. It'll be the city deciding that a couple of these sites that are feasible won't work. And at that point, the city will have walked away from, as I said, a $100 million contribution from partners. And if that's what their decision is, you know, then they've got to make some tough choices on what they're going to do with facilities and fund them themselves on their own shoulder moving forward.
Which means, but again, from a Tiger Cat perspective, you're in a, there are issues with Ivor Wynn. You've got to put a timeline on it. You have to play somewhere down the road. What's the Tiger Cats'
plan B? Yeah,
I would prefer to go through plan A, B, and C right now, which are potential locations that are feasible and doable. And if that exhausts themselves, then we'll have to look at plan B.
But clearly, you've put some sort of agenda on the table for the politicians and those that would be contributors in funding this. I mean, there has to have been some saber rattling. I mean, you guys went public. Bob went public several months ago and suggesting that if you don't do this, you may very well lose your football team.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. There has to be a new facility in Hamilton in order for the Tiger Cats or for a major tenant to be feasible. So that's just the reality, and I think everybody understands that.
Have you talked to any other municipality about the possibility of them providing a stadium to host the Hamilton Tiger Cats other than the city of Hamilton?
Yeah, we've been approached by several, some of them distant, some of them close to it. But, I mean, I think, you know, the reality is that both the provincial and the federal government, certainly HOSCO, but in particular the provincial government, would like to exhaust every single opportunity they can in Hamilton before they move on to another potential municipality. And obviously, we feel the same way.
Scott, good of you to take time for us tonight. We'll watch with interest over the next, 6 weeks or so. Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much. Thanks, guys.
HOSCO has set a February 1st deadline for Hamilton to come up with a plan for the stadium. And right now, they got no plan. As we sit here today, they've effectively rejected the most recently approved or projected site because it's going to cost too much money now.
That's right.
They want too much money for the land.
Yeah, the guys who, the CP, I think, but the people who own the land set a price on the land, which changed the... Changed the budget rather severely.
Well, I mean, and I don't pretend to understand this. You follow this closer than I have, more closely than I have.
Yeah, it's my neighborhood. Just
well, yeah. Is this putting a gun to somebody's head here? Is this highway robbery?
Well, yeah, I think that's what they. I think they saw an opportunity to cash out on that piece of property, which is just sitting there as a shunting yard, a minor railway yard, and said, "There's a huge amount of dough out there. Let's see if we can get it."
Well, except at some point, you'd have—I mean, I'm operating under the assumption that somebody, I think the city of Hamilton, before you went down the road of trying to figure out whether this was the site you wanted to pursue, had to have a budget and an idea of what it would cost to get that land.
You know what? I actually—that's a good—that's a totally logical assumption, but I'm not sure. The cost of acquiring that land was always held out as this kind of X factor in the discussion about, well, we still have to figure out what it's going to cost because there's this and there's actually another.
Well, how do you do that? Isn't that the first thing you do? You say, okay, this is what we budgeted. This is what the government is prepared to give us. The land is going to cost us this much. You don't suppose what the land is going to cost you. You go to the people who own that land and you say, how much?
It's been a rush job, though, Bob. Like, this whole thing has come, it's, and a lot of things here have happened backwards. So, you know, it's honest to God. I don't think they changed the price. I don't think they ever got a price. I think they just got the price. So this has been.
So they miscalculated the price.
They miscalculated what the
value owner, of that land, well, what the owner would want.
Wanted for it, yeah.
Well, that's bass-ackwards, isn't
it? Yes, it is. Yes,
I mean, you know, with all due respect to Hamilton, they ought to lose this whole stadium thing just because the stupidity that they've of this whole process.
Well, there's you can make that case.
You know, I mean, it's just it's laughable.
But here's what I'll tell you: the two sites that they're now proposing are the sites that the Ticats always wanted. One on the East Mountain, one in Confederation Park. Those are not the sites the politicians wanted. They're not the sites there's a new council. The council has changed since the last election. But those are not the politically most attractive sites because they don't do a whole lot in terms of redevelopment. But those are the two sites the Ticats wanted from day one.
Well, at some point it comes down to economics. You have X amount of dollars to spend. That's really what you have. And I'm not blaming the Hamilton Tiger Cats here. I'm just saying that, you know, whoever's been running this thing, and I'm not even sure who has, whether it's, I assume the city of Hamilton. You know, as you go through this process, surely to God you answer some basic questions. And one of the first basic questions you ask and have answered is, how much? I mean, do they have a number for how much the stadium will cost?
They do. Yeah, that they do have.
Yeah, did they make that one up too? Because clearly they seem to have made up the other numbers.
I'm not defending them, Bob, believe me.
Well, I'm attacking them. I mean, they really look like a bunch of bush leaguers on this one.
Yes, they do.
Back with more. Primetime Sports will continue. You're listening on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius 97, watching on Rogers Sportsnet.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
Past the hour. It's Primetime on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius Channel 97. And on Rogers Sportsnet and High Definition, McCowan and Brunt. Later, Pinball Clemens joins us in studio. New announcements with regard to our holiday season initiative, our effort to build schools in Africa. We'll give you an update, and Pinball will speak before he heads off for his holiday time with family in Florida. The Michael Vick story this year has been one principally of his performance on the football field with Philadelphia Eagles. He has led them to a 10-4 record, I think.
Mm-hmm.
First place in the division on the way to the playoffs. A dangerous team, a team that some people think a serious Super Bowl contender. They are exciting. They are dramatic. They may not have a very good defense. In fact, I've said I don't like them because in the playoffs because they don't have much of a defense. But boy, in terms of entertainment,
yes,
he'd be at near the top of the food chain. But what we forget sometimes is that Michael Vick, while he's playing football, is operating with some concerns, hindrances. His attention might be diverted from time to time. Certainly as a result of the dogfighting scenario and case for which he spent time in a penitentiary. Lester Munson of ESPN joins us now. Hello, Lester. How are you?
Hi, Bob. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Michael Vick is living on a court-ordered budget. He will do so until at least 2015. The trustee that's in charge of his bankruptcy is suing everybody in his family. Michael Vick is still trying to figure out or explain $5 million that went missing. Nearly two-thirds of every dollar he currently owns goes to creditors and to taxes. And I think that would be a distraction for almost anybody. And I gather Michael Vick now is not living the high life that he once did, but a rather conservative, almost, in relative terms, menial existence?
It might not be quite menial, Bob, but yes, he does have limits on what he can do. When he was the highest paid player in the National Football League and before the dogfighting investigation began, he had five houses, he had a couple of fishing boats, he had a horse farm, he had all of these businesses that he invested in. Now he's down to a rental apartment in Philadelphia where he plays for the Eagles. He's got one house left in Hampton, Virginia. It's a nothing special kind of a house. And he's got to pay off all these creditors. He actually is doing something here that he did not really have to do legally. He could have declared bankruptcy and just completely stiffed everybody, but instead of doing that, he is attempting to use his success on the field and the money that will be coming his way to pay off a very large percentage of the debts that he ran up during the couple of years just before he went to jail.
Now, Lester, obviously his income stopped rather abruptly. Is that the sole explanation for this enormous hole in which he dug for himself financially? Was it just that lifestyle is he didn't think he was going to stop playing football and was just assuming that he would make that money for some time to come?
That's a big part of the explanation. But in addition to that, he also was spending a fantastic amount of money. He had his mother, his girlfriend, his brother, and his sister on his payroll with monthly payments that he was making to them. He had all this real estate with all these mortgages. And in addition to just the basic expenses of life, he made some investments and he got some financial advice that was borderline criminal. He was victimized by four different financial advisors, people whom he hired to invest for him. And instead of investing for him, they ended up taking a large chunk of his money. As near as I can tell, he lost probably $7 or $8 million to these various connivers whom he somehow found to be his financial advisors. You see a lot of athletes who make big money and then are the victims of bad financial advice. This is easily the worst case of that I've seen in 21 years.
Wow. Now, I don't want you to take offense at this, Mr. Munson, as an attorney, but here is another reality. So Michael Vick, when you add up everything that he will pay, including his agent, his mom gets a $2,500 a month budget. His former girlfriend gets $3,000 a month. He's got the mortgage on the house in Virginia. He's got the condo or the apartment. So that all adds up to about $800,000 a year. Coincidentally, this year he will pay bankruptcy lawyers $748,000. Next year, $1,058,000. That's pretty appalling. You must acknowledge.
It is absolutely appalling. I mean, there's enough lawyer left in me that I admire these lawyers for doing well for themselves. But at the same time, what these lawyers have done with Vic is quite amazing. The judge in Norfolk, Virginia, at one point realized how much the lawyers were making on Michael Vick, and he had a bit of a temper tantrum. I watched him lecture these New York bankruptcy lawyers on what they were doing. It went on for 15 or 20 minutes, and you really wonder about all of this and all the money that was spent on accountants and lawyers just so they could reconstruct what Vic did with his money and then begin to pay it back. It might have been a lot better for everybody if he had just gone through what in American law is known as a Chapter 7, where you come in,
where you shut it down. Right.
I'm bankruptcy, I'm not going to pay him, I'm going to start fresh. And the lawyers have done very, very well here. The judge, oddly enough, cut into the requests that they made. They wanted more money than what you just described, Bob. They thought they had $3 or $4 million coming, and the judge reduced it, but it's still a number that seems excessive on its face.
Now, Lester, because of he's having a remarkable comeback season this year, Michael Vick. Obviously, he is a polarizing figure, but you can't argue with what he's done on the field, and he is going to strike it rich at the end of this season because of that. What would have happened? What happens to all of this if Michael Vick comes back and never regains the magic, is a middling NFL quarterback for two or three more years and then fades out of the game? What happens to all these creditors? What happens to this enormous legal action?
If that had happened, and frankly, that is what I expected to have happen. I'm stunned and amazed at his success. I love watching him. He's a breathtaking player. And as you mentioned in the introduction, it's really entertaining football. But if that had happened, let's say that he would have spent maybe 4 years getting paid $1.5 million or $2 million a year, then these creditors would have collected a big chunk of that money, but that would be all they would ever get. They would have no chance to capture from him the remainder of the money that he owes. And it would the plan at that point, I think you'd have to say that this whole thing was a total failure. Somehow, these lawyers, and I must say the judge also, they expected him to do well. I don't think they thought he would do this well. And right now, it looks like this thing could work out, and some of these creditors who could easily have walked away with nothing are going to end up with 75 or 80% of the money that Vic owed them.
Wow. It's hard to imagine. I mean, just let's go back a few years when the dogfighting story first emerged. It's hard to imagine Michael Vick coming out of this as a sympathetic figure. But in some ways, that's exactly what's happened here.
That is exactly what's happened here. And it comes as a total surprise to me. I was there in Richmond, Virginia, when the courthouse, the entire courthouse, the whole city block, was surrounded with animal lovers yelling and screaming for Vic to be locked up. I mean, it was the reaction to what he did was so large and so profound that you wondered how he could ever come back from that. And he certainly has been doing that. If you listen to any kind of sports discussion in the United States, it amazes me how sympathetic people are to him. I'll tell you what else. Having seen him testify in court, baffled by the simplest of questions, you wonder how he can make those decisions that he makes on the field so quick, so correct, so insightful about what's going on in the game, and then he has absolutely no hope of keeping up with the ordinary affairs of his life. I mean, the contrast between him on the field and off the field, it takes my breath away when I realize he didn't even know how many cars he owned when he testified in court.
But that's not uncommon among high-profile athletes making a lot of money, that we see this inability to manage their money, to contemplate, to understand where their money goes, how much they have on a budget. They wind up hiring people to manage this money, and almost, it seems, invariably, there are tragic stories of this kind. Scenarios under which the athlete winds up with, if not nothing, then significantly less. And the guy who's managing the money waltzes off into the sunset, a rich man.
Yeah, that's happened with Vic. There's four of these financial advisors who took him for everything they could get their hands on.
Wow.
Incredibly, at one point, in desperation, Vic went to the owner of the Atlanta Falcons, the guy who had just made him the highest-paid player in the National Football League, Arthur Blank. He goes to Arthur Blank. He says, "You know, I'm having some trouble with my finances. I need somebody to help me." Arthur Blank recommends a man in Atlanta to take over his finances, and even he gave Vic bad advice and ended up making money himself while Vic lost everything.
Wow!
I mean, the string of people that he encountered. Out of five. Wouldn't you expect one to be honest? I mean, wouldn't just on a random chance that happen? But it didn't happen to him. He had one good one, a guy named Michael Smith, who's in Phoenix, Arizona, who is an absolutely brilliant financial manager. He had Vic on the path to becoming independently wealthy for three generations, and Vic somehow figured out that he should fire this guy.
Wow.
It was getting a little complicated. And he listened to his brother Marcus Vic, a guy who's been convicted of statutory rape. He listened to Marcus, and so he fired him. And from that point forward, he lost money with every advisor that he had. I mean, it's Shakespearean what happened to him.
At the very least, it's a tragic story.
It is.
Lester, good of you to take time for us today. Happy holidays to you, and we'll talk again soon. Lester Munson of ESPN. Pinball, supposed to wander by. Anybody seen him? Is he in the building? Is he around? Somewhere. He's short. Got to look hard. Look under things. It's prime time on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius 97 and Rogers Sportsnet.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
Something else before the hour. Guy's a lunatic.
Not to put too fine a point on it.
You are a loon.
Yeah, I love
only
being
you,
on the edge.
Only you would come here when you got a flight in what, an hour, less than an hour and a half.
What we should say, Bob, is that the guys out at the airport, I'm sure there's guys listening out there in the security, and there's guys, in the American Customs guys, that when Mike shows up tonight to make his flight home to Tampa, they should make sure he makes it.
You need a couple blockers.
Yeah, need one or two blockers. But
yes.
But I've checked in already.
He's here for a good cause.
So,
you're here for a good reason, not just because you're Mike. But I think that would be fair, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I think the line will part like the Red Sea.
Yeah, and I get in late tonight, or I'll get in early tomorrow. Right. So so we'll figure it out. There's always another one of those going. As long as we're not going over the water, that wouldn't be good.
No,
yes.
That's a mess right now.
Yes.
Well. If you need a place to sleep tonight, call me.
All right.
You just curl up at the airport. There's lots of nice chairs there.
Oh, yeah. I
could big
see
enough
it.
For me, too.
Him curling up
to
in
lay
a
down.
Chair. So we're here to talk about what, everybody knows what we're talking about now.
Yeah.
The Michael Pinball Clements Foundation, the objective to build in total 131 schools in Africa and other places around the world so that kids can be educated and then become self-sufficient, we hope.
Yes.
That's our objective.
That's our objective. Yes, it is.
So we started, Michael's been doing this last year was the first year?
Last year, and it was 34 is the number if you include the Haiti. So
right.
It's 34 was the number before this project started.
Right. And now we've added to that. To date, listeners to this program and on our flagship station, The Fan, have contributed in excess of $119,000. Which will build 14 schools.
Yes.
And there's more to come. We have the rest of this week.
Yes.
And we have a few little surprises before the end of this week, but we are still hopeful that people will continue to to contribute.
So is this the time where I can give the pep talk?
Yes.
Okay. This campaign has been extraordinary, but it's the odd thing for me is it's hard for me to listen to radio because they keep saying my name and that drives me crazy because this is about all the people who are donating. And so so that makes me feel a little bit awkward, but they know they're doing what they're doing. But this is what I want to say. We've had some remarkable people who have donated schools, you know, last week, with the torch was amazing. As a coach, one of the things I used to tell my guys is to make average plays every time. This is something that our defense actually adopted this. They liked it so much, and it sort of became a Rich Stubler-ism, if you will. But I used to tell our guys to make average plays every time. Why? What happens when you see the guy that makes the game or the touchdown-saving tackle? It means 11 other guys were out of place. So if we make average plays every time, it really is guys really understanding to trust each other. This is my area. This is my responsibility. I do mine and the other guy does his. Making average plays every time. That's everybody being in the right place and doing what they do. And so we've had some superstars. We've had some extraordinary efforts. And while it's awkward for me, I'm great to ask for money for Special Olympics. But because my name is on this, I've always sort of talked about the programs and what we're doing. I've been very shy to ask, but right now I'm going to say that this is what the power of team means, because you have 1.2 million people that listen to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
On this show. Now we've had people sponsor schools and all by themselves. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, if just a little bit more than 3% of the people who listen to this show right now would join the team, would play, right? If there are 3% of the people, which I think is, which would put us somewhere around that $42,500 number, right?
Okay.
Right? Or 42,500 people, right? So if they donated $20 each, right? So just a little over a third of the audience, that's 100 schools. So this is where we begin to say the power of a team is this. Yes, we want to continue to celebrate all the people who have given, you know, in whatever denomination, and it makes a huge difference. And we see we've been really celebrating the all-stars, the guys who have done a whole school and that. But you know, at this point, you know, we've done in this campaign almost half the number of schools that we did in a full year and some,
right?
In a little bit over the course of it, and we're not done yet. But if we say, hey, let's join together as a team and let's all do a little bit. So if you're part of the 3%, right? If you're one of those guys that's part of the 3% that will go on fan590.com, click on the little fella and go in and donate just $20, right? If just a little bit more than 3% of your listening audience does that, that's 100 schools. That's the power of team. That's what happens when you work together.
And it'll take you minutes. It'll take you less than 5 minutes,
yes,
to do it.
Yes.
It couldn't be simpler.
No.
You don't have to send a check. You don't have to fill out an envelope. You don't have to get a stamp. You don't have to worry about going to the mailbox or any of that kind of stuff. You can do it all online. All you need is your credit card.
And a receipt.
It's all right there.
And the receipt comes right to you within minutes.
There you go. Mm. I mean, it couldn't possibly be easier. So we hope you get out there and do it. We hope that this is this is one of the things you want to do. And I think the response, I met somebody today who bought a school.
Yes.
And is taking he bought a torch,
yes,
and donated a school, and he's taking it to the US or to Vancouver today give us a Christmas gift to somebody else. So he's not even keeping it himself.
That's amazing.
And I mean, he was truly moved by the program. Mm-hmm. But he had a certain, there was a lilt about him.
Yes.
That, and believe me, you will have that if you contribute. You'll,
yes,
have there's a real, yes, feeling of, mm, contribution, and a real feeling of having accomplished something.
Yes.
In doing this. And we're going to keep people informed. We're going to take pictures. We're going to let you know when the schools are being built, how they're being built, what the time frame is, where these schools actually are. So we'll keep you involved in the process as we move forward. So it couldn't be easier. It couldn't be better.
And you couldn't be better, buddy.
No, okay.
Yes. So you
started this thing,
yes,
not me.
But you yes. You,
this was your idea. This was you and your and Diane and your family decided to undertake this.
Yes.
And you're going to have a dinner coming up in the spring.
Yes.
March.
Yes. March 3rd.
Okay.
Every great team needs a quarterback, though. Believe me, I know that.
well done to both of you. Okay, so I can say that from over here.
Yes.
Well,
we're done, boys.
We've done pretty well.
Thank you, Stephen.
But as you said, you know, we don't have to have everybody. Mm-hmm. Not everybody has to do this. Not everybody has to give. Not everybody has to buy a school. Yeah. And I think that's the important message, mm-hmm. is that while we have had individuals and we've had some companies step up and buy a school.
Yes.
And you bought three and I bought one. And that's great. That's all great. But that's not what it's about.
No.
Don't feel like that you should be embarrassed or feel belittled in any way because all you can contribute is a few dollars. If we can get a small percentage of the people listening to this show to contribute a few dollars, a couple of minutes in front of your computer, that's all you really need, a couple of minutes.
Yes.
Type in a number that you're comfortable with, and we'll start building schools like that, one after another. That's how fast these things will start to happen.
And that's what, for me, of course, I'm just a sports junkie. I mean, this is my thing. I listen to you guys whenever possible. So sports is my thing, and I love it. But that is the magic of sport, though. That's what we love about sport, right, is that idea that it does take everybody. None of us alone is as good as all of us together. And when we make that choice, right, to get off the sideline and play the game, right? It's amazing what happens when you can get everybody in. It's one thing to get it's wonderful, right, to get people involved, but when you get everybody participating, that's when real magic happens.
If you haven't made a donation to a charitable organization before, and I'm sure there are many, many people who've never done it. I'm sure there are many people out there have thought about doing it and just never got around to doing it. Mm-hmm. Here's what I will tell you for certain, that every time you do it, you will feel good. Mm-hmm. You will feel good about what you've done, and you will feel good about yourself, mm-hmm. and that feeling lasts an awful long time.
Yes.
So here's what we want you to do right now. Get in front of a computer, go to fan590.com, click on Pinball's face. That'll take you to the proper place. It'll tell you what to do, how to do it. You'll be in and out of there in less than 5 minutes, and you'll do something that'll make you feel good.
And
we should all feel good
at
this time of year.
We should.
Now, you
go.
Get out of here. Okay. You've got an airplane to catch.
Yes, sir.
Michael Pinball Clemens on his way. Happy holidays to you and to your family. We'll see you when you come back.
Thank you very, very much. Appreciate it, guys. Right, and you're awesome. Have great holidays. And everybody that's listening, great holiday season to you and your families.
Our thanks to Michael, to Scott Mitchell, to Lester Munson. We'll see you tomorrow on Primetime.